Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast. I don't know why I did it like that.
It sounded like a theme tune.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Boyd Hilton from Heat Magazine. I'm joined by Kerry Barrow from Heat Magazine and Steph Seelan from Heat Magazine.
Hello.
And John is here, our producer guru, who's not from Heat Magazine.
Well, but can we just also say John's wearing a jumper today, a very smart jumper, and it's made us think that he's going for a job interview.
Ooh.
Very smart. I mean,
trying to get away from us.
It's a smart jumper.
I don't like to contradict. I don't like to contradict your fashion verdict, but it's a nice jumper. I like it. I totally approve it. It's very smart.
He's wearing it with a shirt underneath that
it's
anchors
the shirt
on it.
Element that makes it smart. Yeah.
The whole ensemble.
Yeah.
It's a
smarter than usual ensemble.
Anyway, you look fantastic. And I hope you get that new
More importantly, this week we've got some great meat. We've got the new and last ever series of Scandi Phenomenon, The Bridge. I don't know why Kay's laughing at me, but we have. The finest of meats, The Bridge,
Salami is
back next Friday on BBC Two. It's moved. It used to be, in fact, it's the biggest rating BBC Four Saturday Night Drama ever.
No.
Fact. So it's so big, they moved to BBC Two for this final series.
Can I just pre-warn you? I've got some annoying questions about that.
Don't doubt.
Pre-warning you.
Good pre-warn. Safe is the new Netflix 8-part kind of thriller from Harlan Coben, one of my favourite authors. And Danny Brockhurst wrote it as well. And it's got lots of good people in it, like Amanda Abington and Michael C. Hall. Legendary Dexter/Six Feet Under star.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. And Carnage, in fact. Which is a new, I'm going to describe as Mad Max, the gang show.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
That's a Sky One show starting Sunday, the 6th of May at 8 p.m. Before all of that, though, as is our wont. Oh, and also, by the way, no, I'm not even going to spoil it. We'll get the results of whether or not we've passed the... What was the challenge? The challenge was to pass 100 reviews.
You know what the challenge was. It
was
to get 100 reviews by the end of our birth month. Now, we are recording this on Monday the 30th of April. So this officially... Sorry, guys. This is the end of the birth month.
Yeah. So it's quite tense because...
So tense.
If we did get 100 or more, then I had to buy a cake.
Yeah.
From Patisserie Valerie.
Thank you. We're not getting sponsored, but Pat Val.
Not from M&S or Tesco or Asda or any of Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
I had to go to Patisserie Valerie. Very expensive.
Yeah.
In theory, all their cakes.
No change from £100.
Anyway, we're going to reveal that, and we're also. Oh, by the way, we're going to have a quick, a kind of like a spoilerific discussion of Avengers Infinity War, because Kay hasn't seen it.
Kay's seen it because it's not her bag.
Kay's not big. I don't.
I like Spider-Man.
We sometimes force her to go and see a superhero film. But I wouldn't say she's a Marvel dweeb.
No.
She's, in fact, a normal human
being.
Oh,
I want to be a Marvel dweeb now.
Okay,
that sounds
quite
fun.
Maybe when you listen to us discussing, in spoilerific terms, because I want to talk about the ending. I'm just saying I have issues.
Let's just wait till we get to the end. But we're going to say there's
a
cut-off
right at the
point.
End, and we'll say, don't listen to this if you haven't watched it yet. But we're talking the weekend after the opening weekend. So I think all the real obsessives will have
dweebets.
Seen it this weekend.
We'll
the dweebets and dweebs and nerds and geeks. But if you haven't seen it yet, and of course, plenty of you haven't, then just miss that bit.
Can I just do a quick rewind? When you said about the reviews thing, and you bought cake, the other thing you probably just forgot, you were going to also apologise to the Pogs for doubting that they would review us.
If you remember, you consistently said that there's absolutely no way, it's never going to happen.
Yeah. You're deluded.
You're a lunatic.
Again,
we've got the audio, and you've promised.
I mean,
let's just wait till we get there.
All right, we'll see
no
what happens.
No one knows the results apart from Kay.
Maybe what I'll do is. I'll get John to do an edit, playback, and if you can find any audio where I say that it's never going to happen, I said it might not happen. I didn't say it was never going to happen.
Let's just wait. You might not have to do anything. Okay. Let's just wait.
If he does, I'm going to get John to insert the audio.
Okay.
That's proof.
Okay. Let's all calm down.
Let's just calm down.
Try and get a grip. Yeah. And start with what else. Have you, Steph, been watching or listening to or reading this very week of our Lord?
Right. Dear Lord, this is what I have been watching. So do you remember when we all watched The Alienist?
Yes.
Remember?
Which wasn't about aliens.
It wasn't about aliens. It's on the Netflix. And I said that the guy looked like Daniel Bedingfield. His name was Daniel Brühl. And I loved it so much that I watched 5 of them. Did you, any of you, carry on watching it?
No.
I watched 4. Okay. I watched 4 anyway for when I reviewed it for Pilot TV Magazine, still on sale at a good news agent near you.
Wow. So shameless.
Yeah, yeah.
How many episodes are there in total?
There are
10.
Okay.
Yes, there are 10. I have finished it.
Whoa.
Yes, I finished it. Now, what I would like to say about the ending is the ending I'm incredibly happy with, because we've had a plethora of endings that have been unsatisfactory to me, and that, yes, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Kiri. I'm talking about Save Me. I'm talking about endings that annoyed the hell out of me.
So basically, that's a massive spoiler to say it's all neatly tied up at the end.
Yeah, I'm not telling you who did it, but you do find out. Thank God.
All I'd say is, because I've read the novel, and it's different, isn't it? Because this is a standalone series adapted from a novel with a very specific, a whodunit with a very specific...
Yeah, so there wouldn't be a part two.
So it would be, I think it would, yeah, it would be painfully ludicrous. If
the Alienist isn't going to go on and have another...
No, I mean, they could. They could give them a new, not from that novel, case, couldn't they?
And I really hope they do, because I absolutely love them.
Part of me thinks they might like to think it's done quite well.
Be like Sherlock.
Oh, it's really, really good, but it's... brilliant ending. Good. The last two episodes are excellent. It's very, very satisfactory. There's a lot of horrifying things that happen in it, so I'm just going to warn you.
The ending has got the seal of approval.
Gruesome.
There's some very gruesome things involving animals, so I'm just going to say. Yeah.
Any dogs?
The book is brief. Effing gruesome.
Yeah, it's no dogs, no dogs. Okay, it's fine. I have now read Fire and Fury. Now,
yes!
I know both of you, I know. It's only taken me 6 months. No, I've finally read Fire and Fury. Really, really good. Very, very much enjoyed it.
That was the book about the White House, Donald Trump, Michael Wolff. Very good.
Definitely worth reading it. If, like me, you have to reread passages because it's actually quite hard going to understand if you're not completely au fait with the American system.
Yeah, but also you have to reread it because it's so batshit crazy. You think it can't possibly happen.
That's true. Okay. Now, the other thing that I've been watching is this amazing documentary on crime.
Netflix!
Right. Do you know who Rachel Dozhal is?
Yes.
Right. Boyd, please tell me who she is.
She was, if I believe, the white woman who passed herself off as being a woman of colour.
Oh, shut
and
the
in
door.
Fact ended up working for some kind of advocacy group for black people.
She is, right. So
in America,
this is the
case,
incredible story.
This is mind-boggling.
So, program I'm talking about is called The Rachel Divide, right? It's an hour and a half long. Basically, this woman, she was the president of the local NAACP. Okay.
Stands for?
The National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People. Okay. And she was their president. She was a civil rights activist. She's done so, so much in her local community. Okay. She basically was discovered when she highlighted that there was a load of hate mail coming to her office. And some local people thought that actually she was sending the hate mail to herself put a spotlight on local crime. And in one of these interviews, this guy says to her, are you African-American? And she says, I don't know what you mean, because she can't answer because she was born of two white parents. It is a crazy story. She's brought up in it. She's got a really amazing backstory. She's actually bringing out a book about it. And she is, what she described herself is transracial. So basically said that is there any difference? She believes that she is a black person. She is identified as black.
Because we all identify as different things.
Yeah.
In appearance, what does she look like?
In appearance, she did put some tanned makeup on, and she wore African-American ladies' hair wigs. And
so she wore a fro wig.
She looked mixed race.
I'm showing you a picture of it. Yeah,
it's an amazing
visual aid.
But it's so right. Okay, for those of you who are thinking, oh my God, she's crazy, don't be so quick to judge, because this woman has got an amazing backstory, and you shouldn't forget all the incredible things that she's done. But she was brought up in a home, and there was a lot of adopted children in that home.
Oh my God, is that her without? And
yes, I'm showing Kay a picture of her when she was younger, before she started to pass herself off as being a woman of colour, and then she frizzed up her hair, and she's got a tan.
It's a wig.
Sorry,
many wigs.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's absolutely...
Oh, I want to watch this.
It's absolutely fascinating.
She's written a book as well, I believe.
Yeah, she's writing a book now. I don't think it's out.
I'm sure when she was making that film,
she was writing the book at the same time.
But I believe the book is out any minute
it's
now.
It's not
definitely worth a watch, about because it's a real tale of acceptance. And you kind of think, that's the way she feels. And there's
so what's happened to her now?
I cannot tell you.
She's written this book. The book's called In Full Colour.
Yeah.
There you go.
Anyway, and, you definitely you will really enjoy it.
I saw
it
on Netflix
it.
Advertised yesterday, it's and I wondered
really,
what
it was. Yeah, it's really on sale good. Now. In full colour. You can get on Amazon.co.uk, FYI. Finding My Place. This is the subtitle. Finding My Place in a Black and White World. Okay, Rachel. We'll see.
No, honestly, it's so good. So the Rachel Divide on Netflix.
Yeah, I want to watch that.
On Netflix now. Yeah. And I've watched so much stuff. But the last thing I just want to say is there's a new podcast, obviously it's about murder, called Case Notes, right? Ooh. And it is about, it's historical murders. I know this sounds crazy, but it's brilliant. Historical murders that are based in the musical community. So
what?
The first...
How many murders are there?
I know, you'd think there wasn't many. So there's a crime about a composer, Hydeman, who actually had his head removed after his death, and who stole his head is one of the first ones.
I thought you meant like stage musicals, like Cats.
No. I'm talking about composers.
I know, it's bad,
I'm talking about composers. And it's all murders.
Like classical music.
There are so many murders.
I actually
that
thought it was just going to be classical, set in the rap community.
Yeah,
no,
classical composers.
Classical composers, and yeah. It's
who
very
rife.
Basically,
murder
it's
brought
to you by the people who do... Classic FM. So it's I know it sounds
classic
it's,
FM true crime.
It's really
who'd
good.
Who'd have thought?
It's really interesting. Classic FM
it's loving it.
How can we get in this podcast malarkey?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Love it.
Yeah.
Who's it presented by?
Oh, I can't remember the name. Sorry.
A woman
find
who's
out.
Got a really mellow voice. Yes. On classic
is it,
FM.
Is it a mellow voice? Woman?
It's very good. There's only two episodes so far, but
not
Alid
Jones. Not Alid, my friend.
No, not Alid.
Okay.
Not the lovely.
Just checking.
No. But yeah.
Finished?
Yeah, I finished.
That's good. One bit of true crime in there.
Well, no, I was going to mention, because obviously it's a huge week for crime this week. Big, big week. The Golden State Killer has been captured. Okay.
Oh my God, I've been reading so much about this.
Right, so there's a book out which I have just ordered called, I think it's Into the Dark. It's Michelle McNamara's book. So Patton Oswalt, if you know him as an actor, his wife, who's now deceased, wrote an incredible book. She was completely obsessed with this crime. He's a guy called... he was basically dubbed the Golden State Killer or the East Area Rapist. 40 years after all of his crimes, he raped 55 women, murdered 12 people. He has been captured this week. The book was published in February this year.
And that's fortuitous.
Yeah, but she's passed away, sadly. She's passed away. And Patton Oswalt finished the book for her. So that's definitely worth a read. Even though I haven't read it, I know someone else who has and said it's amazing.
I thought you were going to say... The Golden State Killer documentary series is coming to Sky Living, which it is.
I thought any moment now there'll be a flood of stuff.
Friday the 4th of May, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 4th, 5th, 6th.
Yeah, there'll be so much now. Obviously, someone will immediately bought the film rights to this whole thing because it will be. It's such an amazing film.
It's a
it
CNN,
will be.
Documentary series. There you go.
So, yeah, most of mine did have kind of crime in it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed your list this week.
Oh.
Yeah,
did you?
I've taken a lot away
rare.
From that.
It's
oh,
rare,
good.
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's not rarity.
No,
Lloyd, it's not rare. Thanks, Kay. You're my favourite person in this room and the world.
Oh, John Dunn, look, he's already looking hurt in the corner in his smart jumper.
Kay, can you match that cornucopia of treats?
I will try. I will, but
endeavour. That's all you can do.
First up on the list is something that we all started to watch, Come Home, with Christopher Eccleston and Paula Malcolmson. And basically, we watched the first episode. They played husband and wife, and they split up. She seemingly just randomly walked out on her family, her three children and him. And that was the first episode, and there was three. I went back and watched it. Has anyone watched it?
No, what was it on? BBC?
BBC, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I watched it.
So 2 and 3 was on iPlayer. It's so good.
Yeah.
Episode 2, there's just so many, like... shock revelations, like extremes of behavior. Ooh. Like things you just don't see coming, because the first episode's from Christopher Eccleston's point of view, so you just feel really like, oh god, how can this mother walk out on her children.
Does he turn out to be a bit of a nasty bastard?
Can't tell you yet. Two and three are on iPlayer. I don't want to ruin it.
Okay.
But the second episode is all from her perspective. And you find all your judgments you had made. Some of them you start doing reverse ferrets. You're like, oh, actually. And honestly, there's so many shocking things in it. And then the third episode is the court case to get custody over the children again. And that is really, it's really heartbreaking and emotional. What did you think?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
It's excellent, isn't it?
Fantastic. Yeah.
Is that... It was Danny Brockenhurst.
Danny Brockenhurst, yeah.
Again,
absolutely, yeah.
He's really churning them out, isn't
DC,
he?
DC, yeah.
He's
DB.
So good.
DC.
And also, you know what? On that first episode, I did slag off a little bit Eccleston and his accent, but I have to say...
Oh, yeah.
2 and 3, they were so enthralling that I kind of forgot about it.
Oh.
So that's a testament to how good it is.
That is a testament. Mm. Very good.
So that's episode 2 and 3, that's on iPlayer.
Wonderful.
And also, the woman... Mari, they called her. Mari.
Yeah.
Her spelled Mari, the mum.
Was that your Northern Irish accent?
It's very good. I mean, thought it was very good.
It's Mari.
Apologies.
No, no.
She's Ray Donovan's wife. That's what I've seen before. I didn't realise when I was watching the first time round.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Do you watch Ray? I didn't know you watched Ray Donovan. Yeah. Talk about it. I
fancy
Ray
a little bit.
Yeah. It's very fanciable.
Right, the second thing, the assassination of Gianni Versace. So,
okay.
As mentioned by me.
Oh, Boyd has waxed lyrical about this.
He has,
but
right?
I never believe him. So what did you think?
Oh, Steph, it is so good. But I've got
That's exactly what I say.
Had some technical issues. Boyd talked about it last pod. I was like, right, it's on my Sky Planner. I've got to get onto it. Press play, like opening titles. Oh God, this looks like it's a quality drama. Really excited about it. And then this little fella pops up bottom right hand side of the screen. What do you want? He was signing to me.
Was
I'd
he?
I'd recorded the version with sign language.
Are you telling me that now you could sign to me the whole of the Gianni Versace assassination?
There's nothing wrong with a bit of signing.
No, I love signing, obviously. Well, it's great. But I don't need it, is the thing.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I obviously, even though I knew this wasn't right, I was like, Googled, can you get signing off your Sky Planner, knowing full well that I'd recorded the wrong version. Turns out the other version isn't available, so
you have to
watch it.
But is it kind of interesting, though, to see what the sign language is for some of those horrendous crimes?
Yeah.
I thought that would be quite...
It did make me feel that I could make up sign, because some of it is quite what you might do, like what we might do. Yeah, it's not as technical as I thought it'd be.
Oh,
but anyway, it was really good. I only recorded 6 out of 9 episodes and I was gutted because I couldn't find it on Sky anyway. And just to say, it is absolutely extraordinary. Steph, you got to watch
it.
Because the guy who plays Andrew...
Cunanan,
Darren Criss, is incredible. He's got to win some kind of reward for it.
Oh,
right?
He will, yeah.
And finally, I just wanted to say that the antidote to all of that stuff about crime and, you know, obviously Come Home is great. It's a bit emotionally distressing. Is the Durrells, which I am still absolutely loving. Steph, I know you weren't as into it.
No,
but
I liked it. I'm just saying, I thought they're all having a jolly up.
It's so, so good. And I'm really gutted because, when this next Sunday, it's going to be the final episode. And I just need Louisa and Spiro to get together.
I tweeted about the Durrells last night.
Did you? What did you say?
Yes, did you not? I mean,
obviously, we're watching your tweets 24 hours a day.
What did you say? Tell me now.
Just to remind us, we might have closed our eyes.
I'm just going to crank up to my Twitter account. ITV's The Durrells, I said last night at 2000 hours, currently has Lawrence Durrell and Henry Miller, two legendary authors, discussing sexual identity as they were of a Sunday pre-Watershed. Such a good show. Because it was incredible. Because they brought back, Henry Miller is the legendary author of erotic fiction, Tropic of Capricorn, these very famous books that deal with sex in an incredibly revolutionary way. Mm. He's been on the show before and he comes back and he's staying with them and he likes to walk around naked. So that's kind of play for laughs. But in the middle, there was a whole story about a gay guy who's put in jail last night's show, and it dealt with bigotry and all of that. And in the middle of this episode, the young guy, the young Gerald Durrell, is it Gerald?
No, yeah. Jerry's a little boy.
Jerry's a little boy, sorry.
You mean Lawrence?
Lawrence. I get my Durrells mixed up. Lawrence, played by the brilliant dude from God's Own Country,
Josh O'Connor,
starts talking about how they all did all kinds of things at school.
Oh my God, that was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And his mum said,
did you?
Yeah, because like he says, it's in my books. He's like, oh, I thought you just made that up. He's like, no.
So he's like, so suddenly he reveals
sexy things.
Gay sex fun.
Oh.
Gay sex fun at school.
Gay sex fun.
GSF.
Henry Miller is legendary, famous for his sexual revolutionary thing. Starts talking, and it's a discussion on 8:30 on ITV of a Sunday night in this cozy.
But I liked it. No, it's not quotes, made a big
cozy.
Deal.
No,
it was just like
incredible scenes. Yeah, so I wanted to acknowledge that. Did you say they were
having a jolly up?
P.S. I wish Louisa and Spiro would get together. In your tweet.
I didn't say that. But what did happen is the actor who plays Henry Miller.
Kay, do you know what we haven't had for a while?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Bong.
Yeah, I had all of them, loads of them liking that tweet.
Bong. Just one big bong fest with you.
Wow. Well done you for getting all those famous people on board.
Thank you.
Bravo for tweeting and getting some likes.
Yeah, it was. Make it sound like I did it deliberately.
No,
I didn't mean what I was saying.
I'm giving you a verbal like right now. I'm taking it.
Thanks, everyone.
Anyway, enough of that.
Anyway,
enough of us.
No one cares about us, Boyd. What have you... owner of many likes from your Durrells tweet, what have you been watching?
Everyone cares about you, Steph.
Oh, stop.
Not so much me.
Okay.
A little bit.
I was in San Francisco last week. Well, I was actually an hour outside of San Francisco on my secret set visit. I can't say what it is.
Oh, have you been told you definitely can't say?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let me just say this. Before I went, I rewatched all of the OA on Netflix, which is still now just... even more the greatest thing that's ever been on Netflix. And I include all of your true crime stuff. I include Stranger Things.
You can't include my true crime stuff.
I do. I am. It's so good, the OA. Have you still not seen it, Kate?
No, I still haven't.
Right, promise me.
Okay, I will. If you're saying...
I'm saying,
the best thing on Netflix.
Kay, I have to say, I do think it is.
It's given the seal of approval.
It's even better the second time around. I'd start to watch it and think I've got to brush up on it for various reasons. Not necessarily connected
Nothing
to me.
Nothing.
No.
Can you nutshell it?
No,
it's unnutshellable. That's the brilliant thing about it.
Am I going to be terrified?
No.
A little bit. She might a little bit.
Maybe. I mean, there are elements of it. But anyway, it's unclassifiable, unnutshellable. That's the genius of it. Genuinely radical piece of... they don't like to call it TV. Of
art.
Of series. Of they say it's like a film, like an 8-hour film.
Yeah.
And it is incredible. So I rewatched that. I just started to watch it, I think, for my homework. And then I just carried on watching the whole fucking thing. Stop by my language.
You're a real potty mouth lady.
I know. But I was just astonished at how good it is on the second viewing. And so much more realise the genius of the plotting and everything and how clever it is.
It is so clever.
Because there's so many, goes down so many weird routes and twists and turns. And the best thing of all, and I said this when it came out, it was not the best thing of all, but one of the defining elements of it is that, you know, we talk often about how long it takes for the title credits to arrive.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. 52 minutes.
No way.
Yes. The all-time
record.
That's
even longer than The Good Wife and Good Fight.
And it is so brilliant when
52
it arrives.
Minutes.
The hair's on the back of your neck. I knew it was coming because I'd seen it all before. But when the titles arrived 52 minutes in to the first episode of... the OA, the hair's on the back of your neck.
How long was the episode? 60 minutes.
It's over an hour. All the episodes different lengths. That's the other thing.
Wait. So it took 52 minutes for the credits, and then it was just another 8 minutes.
No. It's longer than an hour. The first episode.
Yeah. 9 minutes.
But what's amazing about the OA?
13, 14, 11, 13, 15, 17.
Because I really enjoyed when I found out what the OA was.
Yes.
And that point.
Yes.
And you shouldn't look anything up because when I found out what that meant, I was like, oh my god.
Remember, the whole thing dropped 2 years ago, pretty much in December of 2016, there was no fanfare, even less than like when they dropped surprise things like Making a Murder, they dropped quite the surprise. This thing arrived called the OA.
It was the year after Making a Murder.
So you can't tell me what the OA is.
No,
and that's
don't.
Don't read
the
it.
The orangutan.
Oh, you've read up on it.
Yeah.
But don't read up on it because it's amazing. And also, you come away from it. Actually, I'm going to watch it again now. You've hyped me up to it.
Good.
Because you come away from it and you really sort of think you could take. You don't really know what's true and what's not true, and that's the magic.
It's a mind
melt.
It's mind bending.
Okay, and so this is totally unconnected to why you went to San Fran, right?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, it may or may not be connected.
But anyway, you did what you call homework for an unspecified
may or may not be connected.
Reason, and then you went to San Fran.
Yeah, so that was I was in this place outside of San Francisco, about an hour outside of San Francisco.
So you didn't go to Alcatraz?
Didn't go to Alcatraz,
Love Alcatraz.
No, I've been to Alcatraz, it is great.
It is great.
But I carried on reading Simon Mayo's novel, which I mentioned, did I mention that two weeks ago?
Yeah, so can I have it now?
No, I haven't finished it yet. I'm very slow.
Do you know
I'm a very
what?
Slow reader now of fiction.
You're like a tortoise.
I know, it's weird.
This is his new novel about that war between America.
Yeah.
And it's based in the prison. So I heard him speak on BBC Two to Graham Norton about it, and it was really interesting, so I've put in an order for it.
It's really good, and everyone should read it. Yes, he's doing like a tour at the moment of interviews about it, and
it sounds really good and well researched.
And you know,
Dartmoor Prison, so it's all these Americans.
It's called
Mad Blood Stirring. So it's all of these prisoners ended up in Dartmoor Prison
and were segregated
from
the British American War,
which not many people know
in the 19th century. Not even know about. And the film is being made a film of, and you know who's writing the script? This is what I wanted to say.
Oh my god,
yeah,
who?
He said it on this thing.
Jack Thorne.
That's it.
Of Kiri.
Yes.
Fame.
Oh,
and
oh.
I mean, I know you didn't like Kiri because you're...
I just didn't like the ending. I loved Kiri.
He's
really
what else did
be better ending.
He did the Harry Potter play, which is brilliant.
Yes.
He's a genius.
Oh,
he's one of the great...
He's very young as well, isn't he?
He's young, a lovely young guy. He's one of the best scriptwriters. He did National Treasure, his previous show.
Oh,
we
love National Treasure.
Okay. He's so clever. And he was going to do the next Star Wars film, the third in the sequels.
What happened?
Well, because then J.J. Abrams came back on board and now he's writing it. But at one point he was writing the Star Wars because he's so highly thought of. This incredible talent. he's an absolutely brilliant writer, and he is doing the screenplay.
Do you want to know something interesting about that? So Simon was saying that he wrote a 4-page synopsis of what he thought this book would be about.
Yeah.
And the film, they bought it without him even having written a word. Yes. And so he's like, right, I better write this book then.
Yeah. Yeah, the film writers have brought that up, snapped up, because it's such a great story, yeah.
I really want to read this book. Yeah. When are you going to finish it?
Soon.
About 2020.
How? Well, give me a time frame.
I mean, copies are available at your local bookshop.
Crack it open now.
I want the one that you have read.
Uh-huh.
You want to read the one
that I've read?
Yeah.
You're weird.
I know.
And finally,
I want to touch the pages that you have touched.
Steady, honestly. I can't deal with this perversion. Finally, from me, we're going to review it next week in full. I'm telling you now. But I have seen the first 3 of 5 episodes of Patrick Melrose.
Oh, yes. Are we going to review it next week?
Yes.
I'm so excited about Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch, adapted from the novels, which I've also read, by David Nichols, the great One Day writer. Yeah.
Did he write that? Yeah. I didn't realise.
He wrote the script.
I thought the script.
So the novel's written by Edward St. Aubin, or Teddy, brilliantly, as Benedict Cumberbatch calls him in interviews, Teddy St. Aubin, he's completely honest about it. They're totally based on his life growing up in this aristocratic family.
Okay.
And
so he is Patrick Melrose.
Right. Obviously there are elements of it. There are incidents and there are characters that are not completely from his life, but he's absolutely honest about how autobiographical it was. Basically, it is autobiographical. Wow. These are five novels. He wrote 3. There was a trilogy and there was a bit of a gap, and then he wrote 2 more. And they're incredible.
I'm bracing myself for this because it's a bit dark, isn't it?
Is it dark?
Oh, yeah.
God, yeah.
Because on the trailers, it looks really funny.
It's everything. It's funny.
Darkly funny.
Because the characters, these aristocratic, spoiled, entitled. It's an absolute satire on the horribleness of the aristocracy, of the entitlement of those people, of which he is one. It's about addiction, other things, abuse. Mm.
What's it going to be on?
It's going to be on Sky Atlantic / Now TV. We're reviewing film next week, but I just want to say it's exciting.
Do you know if it's going to drop all in one go?
No, they can't drop all in one go because
of the America thing.
It's Showtime. So it's Showtime. It's a co-production with Showtime in America. And Showtime are going to show every Saturday night there. And they're actually putting it out, they're doing the Westworld / Game of Thrones. So Sky's showing it live, in quotes, 2 a.m. on a Saturday night as it goes out in America, if you really want to get there first.
I do want to get there first.
Then it'll be on 9 o'clock or whatever on the next day on the Sunday, effectively.
Exciting times.
It's exciting. But it's exciting. Cumberbatch. So what I was going to say was Cumberbatch action, definitely his most challenging role ever. Mm. And some Cumberbatch action, you won't believe the kind of Cumberbatch action you get in this.
Is there
disturbing?
Everything.
Nakedness.
All of it. There is nakedness.
Because
I can confirm.
That thing.
Spoiler alert.
Full frontal.
There's backle.
Full backle.
Yeah, no frontal. You don't get to see the Cumberbatch.
We get to see his naked back.
You don't get to see Ben's.
Hold me back, man.
Little Ben.
You don't get to see little Cumberbatch. Oh. But you do get to see the Cumberbatch posterior briefly. Cumberbatch fans will want to know that. I'm revealing that now.
Cumberbatch.
Wow.
Steady. Very good.
Wow.
Well, it's that time, isn't it? Before we get to the meat, What time is it?
Reviews news! Reviews news!
This is the moment that
we have all been waiting
for.
And by all of us, I mean me and Steph.
Yeah.
I don't know the results, so I am giddy with anticipation about this whole thing.
So we've set the scene already. 100 reviews were needed by the end of the birth month, April. That's today.
He's scoffing now.
Yeah,
he's so sure.
You're
he's
smirking
won.
And scoffing at the same time. That's a what would that be? Smirk and scoff.
I don't know. A smoff.
And last week when we did the pod, we had 94. And I've got to say, I was nervous because I thought,
I was nervous.
And Boyd was looking more confident in himself, which I didn't like. And I was like, what's going to happen?
Charming.
Yeah. About this particular
matter. No, it's true, Boyd.
And I'm here to reveal, Boyd.
Yes, Kay.
Could I do a drum roll?
Yeah. We have got 104 reviews. Even John Dan is reluctantly clapping, though he's been part of this all
very
along.
Reluctant.
We have overachieved.
We're overachievers.
I mean,
we've got 4 to spare.
And you said, actually, Alec Baldwin only had, 2 or something for his UK... We might be more than Alec Baldwin right now.
What I said was he had 98, but...
yeah, in the English iTunes for an American show. Well done. Well done,
In
everyone.
The face of defeat, you've just got to lay down.
Now, there's a slight... Can I just point out, there's a slight...
here we go.
Well, there's a slight logic errors. You're saying that we don't know whether we want, but how, why?
No, obviously, I did.
So why listen, then would I have gone out and bought some cake?
I didn't know. She didn't know. I told you because I knew that we needed Pat Val served for
us. Yeah, I mean, we couldn't.
So you knew.
I told him.
You expected us to stop the podcast record as Kay reveals that we've gone over 100, and then I run down to Patisserie Valerie in Soho and go and bring it back.
We don't want you to get the
Patisserie Valerie.
Tapestry Valerie. It's the offshoot.
God, he's actually gripping the table now.
I mean, what gives?
Okay, where make is any the sense? Cake? Listen, we're not going to ask you to hit pause on this and to run down.
Oh my God.
I'm
it's a live reveal.
I mean, listeners.
I'm taking a photo as well. Right.
This is great visual work. I'm going to reveal the cake.
I'll describe it.
Get it out,
Boyd, wearing his blue jumper, is reaching below the desk.
Try and remain calm. But let me just explain this. So right. Kay obviously knows that I have bought cake because I came back with, and I knew that we'd gone over the 100. You didn't even know that.
No,
my words to him were, because he had a busy day and I said,
didn't know we'd gone over the 100.
Don't come back unless you've bought Pat and Val with you.
So in my hectic schedule, I've already done another podcast, Five Live, everything. I managed to buy cake from Patisserie Valerie, but Kay hasn't seen it yet. And she was like looking at the menu on Friday of all the different cake options.
Well, we were both
trying to tell
menu.
Me which one to get. Yeah. I just bought the cake that I thought looked nice.
We required one with fruit as well. We said, it's a huge bag. This is amazing.
Great days. There you go,
thanks,
listeners.
Thanks, guys. Right. So I'll just describe the cake. Cake is got strawberries on, chocolate. There's some sort of, what are those? Are those lady fingers?
Little chocolate swirls. Boy, can you hold that gosh. Angle and take a picture of you?
It's wonderful.
Cake. That's it. Humble pie. There we are, Steph, get in. Yeah. Oh, this is great. That is great.
I don't know how much you can see of the cake, but...
No, wow. We've got a lot of cake shots there.
But the most important thing is who helped us get to this, Kay?
Is that the most important thing?
Boyd.
Okay, yeah.
It is,
yeah.
Boyd. First of all, no, before you open that cake, what would you like to say? 104 people plus the three in America, we can't forget those lovely pogs, our transatlantic pogs.
Do you have a
they
message?
They took the time to
thanks very much
leave
to all of them, yeah. Thank you.
No,
what?
Boyd. You said they wouldn't do it, Boyd. You said we wouldn't get 100.
I didn't say that. I denied it. I denied it.
Bear in mind, we won't let this moment pass. Without you apologising. Do you want to say something?
You can whisper it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have anyone to apologise for. But if you want me to do like a politician-style apology,
that'd be great. Come on.
If you were offended by the allegation that I didn't think you were going to make it to 100 reviews, then please accept this apology.
I'm taking a picture of that.
How many pictures of me?
The moment Boyd apologised. Listen, that's going to go down in history because that never happens. Okay, listen, I've got some thanks to give. Right. Let's start with Solid Gone Gold.
Okay.
Love the interplay between the three presenters. It's like a bunch of mates having a smart chat on pop culture, well-informed and charming.
You called us smart.
I don't think he's listened to this podcast.
No,
I think he's getting us
wrong
confused.
One.
Have you made these up?
No, I haven't. Daisy
You've been defeated, Boyd. Just
Ebony
accept it.
Says, I've taken over my daughter's phone to leave another review.
Oh.
As I've already done it, but she wants us basically to have cake.
No, I knew you were going to say that.
Does that count?
That's still, okay, even if
recount,
it did count,
recount.
We were still 103.
Okay.
Listen, we've got enough. Yeah, exactly. Steve Wilkie, who I also suspect might have left us one before.
The corruption of this is now coming clear.
Says, great Monday morning listening. The girls talk a million miles an hour. Yeah, you've said that before, Steve. I'm really sorry about that, Steve. DJ Rawlings says, Boyd and the team's cheerful and chatty style is both entertaining and informative, essential listening for any telly addicts, which I think would go on a poster. Then, confusingly, Christy Rawlings, who
related.
I'm thinking, different person, I'm sure.
Here we go. More dodgy shenanigans.
No. Says, I started listening to the podcast a year ago when I moved to the UK from Australia.
Oh.
And it's helped me settle in by being up to date with what's happening on TV and having water cooler conversations at work.
We are settling people in this country. Mm. We are doing a great service.
I feel like some of these reviews are written on the grassy knoll by the book depository. So a conspiracy going on.
There is not a conspiracy
really
going on.
Really good show, especially Kay. Love from my mum, aka Technobot. That's definitely my mum. She's learned how to use the internet. No, it's not. Boy, look shocked. It's not.
I'm amazed.
It must be someone related to me. Go School says, always a treat, great chemistry that always feels like any moment might spiral into chaos in a good way. That's such a great observation.
So true.
It is ramshackle.
That is true.
And I'm totally invested in Kay and Steph getting their cake, and that's why they've left their first ever podcast review.
First ever podcast review for us to get cake.
One new one.
No, last two. No, we've got two new ones.
Reviews.
One left by Reviews News. And they say, okay. Always love Boyd and Radio 5, Richard Bacon TV review slot. This is a great replacement.
Ah,
that's nice. Great replacement. Good recommendations. And finally, oh, I love this one. It's a European podcaster.
What?
Mm. Yes. I left the UK a few years ago and moved to the Netherlands. And they said, this podcast is the perfect antidote for my longing for Britishness in my life. Loves listening to us bicker away and often finds themselves, I don't know if it's a girl or a boy, a lady or a man, guffawing embarrassingly in public.
Oh, guffaw away.
And enjoys torturing themselves by listening to us talk about TV basically they can't get access to unless it's on Netflix.
What? Yeah. So they can't access British television, but they're still listening to this podcast. That is
no, this is the craziest fact. I perhaps am the only listener who doesn't own a TV. I salute you.
No, a lot of the kids these days don't have a TV, do they? They watch stuff on their laptops and their tablets and their iPhones.
Yeah. So they don't have TVs. What do you mean?
A lot of young people.
I know,
don't
these
get
rare
TV.
People. I know, I'm with you, Steph, but still, we salute you, a European podcaster, and we thank all 104 plus the three in America, 107 people.
Well, I mean, I will be having a recount of the genuinely new ones, we'll see whether I can take the cake back.
No, there are no take backs.
I'm unleashing it now, but you know what this means?
What does it mean?
We're going to have to cut this into 110 pieces, because there's 107 reviews plus... four of us.
It's beautiful.
It's actually 111 pieces.
I'll give you the ceremonial knife.
Yeah, it's a dagger. Boy, do you want to do it?
No,
this is your humble.
No,
pride.
Whilst we're doing
some
this,
of us
though,
got, some of us have got to keep this
it's
podcast
got a bow on
going.
It.
Kay is cutting into the cake.
Yep. Oh, it's so exciting.
I think you might. Yeah.
Kay.
I think maybe you should take it. Oh.
Kay.
This has been enormously exciting for me and Steph and John Dan a little bit, not at all for Boyd.
I don't think for
but
John Dan
we'll
either.
Be doing reviews news when we get new reviews coming in, maybe once a month, whatever.
Well, also, I was going to say, why don't you email us? I mean, text us. I mean, send us
Boyd.
Your opinions about stuff as well. You know,
well, funny
like,
you should say
we
that.
We can read them out like they do on Wittertainment.
Yeah, you know, well, it's funny you should say that because this was the bit to announce that actually, thanks to John Dan, we've now got a Twitter account.
That's what I meant. Twitter account. We've got a Twitter account.
Yeah, or you can send us posts.
You can at us Twitter account, which is called?
At Unmissables Pod.
See?
And we so far have 9 followers. Now, I'm not going to start campaigning for more followers because it's going to get out of control.
I say 100 followers by Christmas.
No. Oh my God.
Right.
That noise is John's
a million followers by
the
end of next week.
100 followers by Christmas.
Look, his scoffing voice again. Anyway. Right. Yeah, so get in touch with us if you've got any questions, suggestions, you like what we've reviewed.
Kay's kind of
mashed up the cake, sorry.
It's a mashup.
It's a mashup, it's nice.
Anyway, so I had to buy this cake in Patisserie Valerie in town. And I also, today, it's a very hectic day for me because I've been doing 2 other podcasts and going on Five Live.
Poor boy.
Reviewing Five Live's TV Club.
Oh, yeah.
Five Live's TV Club. Live at the BBC broadcasting. Yeah. So I had to buy this bloody cake before. I had to take the cake to the BBC.
Oh, God, did they think it was
security.
For them?
That's, everything you bring in the BBC now, you have to go through. There's literally like an airport-style security device. Yeah. So you have to put your bag and your cake in a Patisserie Valerie box through security. And the bloke goes, oh, is that a cake? I went, yeah, it's a cake, yeah. And then I had to explain to everyone what the bloody hell I was doing with this massive cake from Patisserie Valerie.
I hope you did some promo and told them to tune in.
Saying. I did insist on, by the way, you'll be pleased to know, on Nihal, who hosts the show on Five Live every day between 1 and 4, he said, what's your title at Heat? We had a whole thing about that. And I said, I do the Unmissables podcast because they have an Unmissables thing on their show. They have a slot called The Unmissables.
I know, you said this before.
I said this before. Mm. And so then we have a little discussion who came up with it first. I think we might have done it simultaneously. I don't know.
No, we came up with it first.
We definitely did it first.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, come on. Enough cake talk. It's time for the meat.
It's time for the meat.
And we're going to start with The Bridge. Series 4 of the smash hit Scandinavian crime drama coming to BBC Two next Friday at 9 o'clock. I happen to know that Kay Ribeiro has only recently caught up with this series, The Bridge. Mm. Series 1, 2 and 3, haven't you?
Yes.
In time for Series 4 because you spent most of your time watching it next to me at your desk at work. And I'm not saying it's not work. I'm just saying that's what she's been doing.
That's hard work.
Hard work.
And also, I'd like
Important
to retract
work.
My statement that the tunnel was better.
Already?
That is big news.
Early retraction.
Yeah, Steph,
Retraction news.
Yeah.
This
is the OG.
We should say the tunnel was based on, this is the original.
Yeah.
The Danish / Swedish.
As I said last week, is the bridge the tunnel?
Yes,
and
the bridge
it
is the
tunnel. Can I just ask another question?
Yes.
Are they the same stories?
I believe we've explained before, but
the first series.
The first series is the same story. Then they diverged.
Oh, right, yeah.
And now they all have their own story. Yeah, they will have their own completely different thing. Gotcha. Essentially, it's the high-functioning female detective who's a kind of maverick, kind of uncompromising in the way she deals with people, and with a male colleague. So that kind of structure and that format, if you like, yep. that premise even, is what this shares with all the different versions. There's an American version as well. Mm-hmm. And then they spin off into their own little world. And now we have, as Kay's about to explain, in series 4, where are we, Kay? This is my question. In the world of The Bridge.
Okay, now before I say anything, I've just got to say, look, I know a lot of people watch The Bridge and everyone's going to hate us if we give any spoilers. So what I'm going to do is I'm reading information that's on the official BBC website. So whatever I'm saying now, this is out there in the public
domain.
Don't
blame us.
Yeah, don't hunt us down. Okay, so we're 2 years after we last saw Sega and Henrik.
Is it Sega?
Yeah.
Or Saga?
Sega, I think they call it Sega, don't
Sega,
they?
Okay.
Sega.
Sega Mega Drive.
Sega Mega Drive or Saga Insurance.
Saga, I don't know.
Anyway.
Okay. You say Saga, I say Sega.
Good joke. Anyway, so a woman is found brutally murdered at the base of the bridge, and it transpires that she's the general director of the migration agency in Copenhagen. And it's believed that the killer's motives was after a highly publicised deportation scandal. Okay. So with every series, there's some kind of like social commentary on what's going on. So this is all about the borders and immigration and people's feelings about it and underlying racism and stuff like that. Anyway, so the most shocking element about this is, and as I say, this is officially out there, is that Sega's actually in prison for her mother's murder. And so at the end of last series, she's under investigation, internal investigation, and it was all looking up in the air. You know, she'd kind of like been suspended from her duties. But now when we catch up with her, she's in prison. Henrik is like struggling because he cares for her greatly. That's her partner, her work partner.
But is he her life partner?
Yeah, they have. So well. She's very good. She has no strings attached sex. And so she's very clinical about
like
it.
Like Elise.
Yes, exactly. Because it's the same, yeah.
same character.
They're shag partners, not life partners.
I can't
partners.
Really get my head
They're
around
F-buddies.
They're the same character.
They F.
Saga is Elise.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm finding this so
and nor do I.
Okay.
It's called a... Yeah.
But you know, but she's not called Elise, so it's not
they've
like the
name.
Same
they changed the name, but they're the same character. So you
well,
know
because she's different. She's French, isn't she?
So she's not the same.
Oh my god.
Okay.
No. Right. Okay.
Okay. No, wait a minute. I'll tell you.
Okay,
right. So the tunnel set obviously Britain and France.
Yeah.
So she's played by a French actress and character who's Elise.
Yeah.
This is Sweden, Denmark.
Yeah.
And so she's a Scandinavian character. She's like
yeah. So they are in no way
she's
the same.
She's a Swedish character.
They are in no way the same. Really, they're not. Are they?
They are, but we'll skip over it.
Okay.
So anyway, so Henrik's struggling to cope without her because, you know, they work so well together. And he's been paired up with a new Danish colleague who's also very abrasive and brash like Sega. And his name is Jonas. And together they have to kind of solve this mystery of who murdered the general director of the migration agency. And it's all wrapped up in that.
It's all wrapped up in that, Steph.
Right.
What did you think? So
no spoilers.
Okay. Well, why,
in answer to your question, though, the tunnel,
right,
was a remake. It was a British for Sky remake of this show that started out in Scandinavia, in Sweden and Denmark. So they took the format, the premise, of so they're not
based
exactly
on
the
characters,
yeah, but,
based on the characters, but they're not the same. So she
what's
isn't
like saying,
actually Elise.
It's like saying a new version of Hamlet.
No, because like when they do,
so you know, like
no, it isn't Elise. Because Hamlet is still the same person.
Oh, that's a bad example.
That is a bad example. It's like when they did The Returned. Right, that was the same.
Yes,
they were all the same. It was completely the same story when they did it in France, when they did it here, when they did it in
the first series is exactly the same.
Right, so in the first series,
I would
say
not exactly the same because they're different names. That's your point that you're making. Not exactly the same, but pretty much the same.
That's
apart
the
from
thing.
Names.
They're
and
not
names
the same names. But who? Okay, well, who
and nationalities.
Is the equivalent of what's his face? Our guy.
Yeah, so he was in it.
Yeah, there was an equivalent. Who's now?
There was an equivalent. He's not in it anymore.
Yeah.
He's not in anymore.
No.
Well, then that's so
there's a
not
new
the
detective
same as the tunnel.
In. No, but she's now got a new detective colleague who's from the other side of the country, that's featured in the thing because it's about Denmark and Sweden and the
Danish.
I think people will understand why I think this is not the same.
Okay.
Anyway.
Well, anyway, what do you think about this one?
Right, so I've never watched The Bridge before, so I'm completely virgin to it.
I was going
to
say, duh.
stop ganging up on me. You're all hopped up on cake. Right.
Who saw that? Okay.
So, yeah, I have to say, when I first started watching it, I was very confused as to why she was in prison. So I nearly texted her. I thought it was going to be very annoying. And then obviously you work out why. So no, without any spoilers, it's very gruesome. I mean, it was just fine, but I didn't find it in any way. Oh my God, Kay's going to actually kill me.
Hiding the knife. Case.
In any way as compelling as I did the tunnel. And that's not just because I had to read it, because it is a show you have to read.
It's got subtitles.
Yeah, that's what you say. It was just fine.
I honestly believe, love it. In the similar way to when I started watching the tunnel and I was going to go into series two or three, and you said, no, Kate, honestly, go back to the beginning, because you've got that friendship between the... I think if you had watched the bridge, if you went back to the beginning, you'd feel differently.
You've got to go back and watch the first three series.
I don't really care about Saga. Sorry.
Why did you care about Clements Poesie?
Elise.
In the tunnel and not Saga. What's the difference?
I can't put my finger on it.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
Have you just taken against Saga? Is it a classic Steph?
No. Well, I think she's just unlikable. Reminded me a little bit of Charlize Theron.
If you'd watched just series four, episode one, I just watched it as a standalone episode, I wouldn't particularly warm to her.
Warm to her, but that's the whole point, isn't it? She's a spiky, difficult...
Yeah, but you don't understand her in the same way that if you watched more of it.
Yeah, it was just fine. Coming to it fresh.
I think we've established it. Fine.
That's the real crime there.
Two
just
words,
saying just
JF,
fine.
Just fine.
JF, Kay. Get out.
Kay, as someone who has spent most of the last few weeks watching The Bridge, series one, two and three, and who's also a fan of The Tunnel.
She loved The Tunnel.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. That's why I'm asking. What do you think?
I think it's brilliant because, as always, the crime is really smart and complex and well thought through, and it's a social commentary. So obviously that's always standard. That's good. But it's always about, for me, the relationships between the colleagues, their personal lives, the love interests, all that. And getting to understand... I mean, it's all about Saga. And, you know, I just think she's such a brilliant creation that even if you had 10 series, there'll be new stuff that you learn about her. There's so much depth to her and complexity that you just... She's just brilliant to watch.
Right. So here's my issue with you. You just said, right, that you preferred... So what did you start watching first? I can't remember. The Bridge or The Tunnel?
The Tunnel.
They're both the same. So, yeah. Right.
I mean, they're not from series two onwards. But anyway, let's skip over.
Right. So you watched The Tunnel first?
I watched The Tunnel first.
Okay. Yeah. And now you prefer The Bridge?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. It's just... I don't know. I do like The Tunnel. I still stand by that, but I just think this is better.
I'm going to tell Stephen Delane.
Oh, don't tell him.
And Clements Poesie.
They're
both brilliant, but I think this is as the original.
Good. Let me interject with my verdict on the fact that what's happened, it's all about the experience, isn't it? Because you two watched The Bridge.
The Tunnel.
You always watch The Tunnel on Sky.
Yeah.
And it's really good. They've done a brilliant job. They've done a brilliant job of turning this great idea into its own unique thing on Sky, the British European version. And it's very clever. And both Clements Poesie and Stephen Delane are brilliant. But I think when you go back and you watch this from the beginning, you realise this is the original concept. So this whole... The Tunnel would not exist without this. That's crystal clear. So this is an iconic show that has pushed back the boundaries of particularly Scandi noir. I mean, it kind of invented, with The Killing, those two shows, The Killing and this, invented the Scandi noir movement that has changed the world of television, basically. So it wouldn't even be a thing, The Tunnel, without this. So I think that's a key issue. So then you go back and you watch all of the three series. The richness of the character, I think, is slightly more of a thing in The Bridge than in The Tunnel. So I think Sophia Helen's performance and what she's like visually and her reactions, everything about her performance is kind of iconic. Mm. And much as I love Clements Poesie, I think she's brilliant. I think there is something unique about this version of that character, I think. So...
And
it's
also, there's a third.
That.
I think Hans Rosenfeld.
Hans Rosenfeld of Marcella fame is the creator and writer. Kay and I went to see the screening, and he was there doing the Q&A. And he was so brilliant, first of all, wasn't he? Did we mention this already on the podcast?
He was really good. But also, Sophia Helen.
They're all great.
The thing is, she's such an exceptional actress and the character is so iconic. What was nice is when we went to see the screening, they did this Q&A. And it sounds ridiculous to say because obviously she's an actor and she's playing a role. But she is so different from the role of Sega. Like, she's there, you know, her hair was all up. She looks, you know, she's very feminine and like bubbly and warm. Completely the opposite of her character on screen.
So you realise what a stretch it is and how it what a good
She said how she talked about how it affected her playing this this character.
Right. Because you've said, okay, I am gonna watch The Bridge from the Beginning now. Because I love the tunnel so much. And I have to say I'm going to find it very hard to believe that I could like the
Here's my prediction.
But I know Kay loved the tunnel.
Here's my prediction. After 30, so the 10 episodes each in the first three seasons, after 30 episodes, 30 hours of Sophia Helen as Saga Noron, you're gonna admit that she's better. She's better. She's a better character, better performance. Well, and that's the key. And I think visually it's brilliant as well. I mean, it's different. So a lot of this is all about that. Literally the bridge that goes from Sweden
you see
to
that
Denmark
a lot.
Is a key. You see it on her driving across it in her car. It's all it's more iconic, I guess.
Oh, and
the
opening
line.
Credits.
Yeah,
the credits, song.
Everything. The whole, the music, the performances, the visuals, the Scandinavian, even the interiors. You know, there's a lot of Scandinavian interior going on. Well, better than IKEA, even if you can imagine such a thing. It's that. It's high end. I'm talking high end.
Okay.
Anyway, this opens with, I think, was all I wanted to say was, without spoiling anything.
Yeah, because this has been a very good non-spoiler.
It has. So it opens with the grimmest murder.
Oh,
And I don't want to even give away what it is, because I think it is, it's such a shocker, isn't it, that opening killing and the technique, the method by which this poor woman has been killed. And by the way,
symbolic.
We should mention that that the creator made it very clear at the Q&A that they're killing men and women, because he doesn't want it to be there's a whole thing at the moment about every TV show is about women being killed.
They're equal opportunities.
Yeah. So when you first, I know, because it is quite such a shocking scene, this poor woman, how she gets killed in the opening of this first episode of The Bridge. But as will happen, and I've seen episode two. Have you watched episode two yet?
No, not yet.
I've watched episode two. So then again, without spoiling it, it's a lot of stuff happens. It's not about her gender, but is the bottom line as to why she's killed. That's
equal,
that's not spoiling anything.
Both,
that's not spoiling anything.
And
the
bastards.
Atmosphere, the supporting characters, the way that, like in Marcella, he introduces other characters that are going to be basically suspects, and you can't get a grip on them, and they're all doing mysterious, weird stuff. He's such a master at creating an uneasy world of weird, mysterious characters, and you don't know why they're doing what they're doing. You know, it's so clever, so it's brilliant.
But he also said that, which I liked, so he said when he does like 8 episodes or 10 episodes, 9 and 10 will be like a feature length film for him, and then he draws everything from the previous episodes into it so that he's got nothing ultimately in like 7 or whatever, and then he just throws in red herrings.
No, he said it was brilliantly honest. So yeah, he said that if you go back and watch, is there only 8 episodes of this series, and someone asked him why they're only 8 when you normally do 10, and he said if you look at the episode 8s of the previous series, there's not much happens in them because he's compressed all the action into the first 7 episodes. He runs out of plot in episode 8 and then he's got his 9 and 10 all done.
So there'll be like strands of storyline that
but to admit that, you know what I mean, publicly, I think it's so good. That shows how confident and
he's so entertaining.
Can I just also say, this is not a spoiler, there is one thing that happens in this episode with a piece of pottery, and it absolutely freaked me out. Because if you listen to the podcast regularly, you'll know that RK is very creative, and she
RK
and she loves a little bit of pottery. And I think what we need to do is put a photograph of what Kay's made and what this other person's made up side by side on the internet, because it is freaky how similar these things are.
And I'm starting my pottery course up again, so I might start factoring.
Big news, big news, big pottery news. Before before we end up recording an 8-hour podcast, like the whole series
of... that's unlike you.
How many stars? I mean, this is the... I'm guessing Kay's going to go with a big star rating.
There could be no less than 5 from me.
It's a 5 from me. This is the big question. Is Steph going to see the error of her ways?
I'm going to say 4, because I've 4 for effort.
What was the phrase you kept using? Just good, just enough,
fine.
Just fine.
Oh, just fine.
Don't say that again.
Yeah, but I don't. Right, I'm going to watch them, and then we'll come back to this.
Listeners, the way more than just fine, The Bridge,
the exceptional
series 4, the last ever series, begins next Friday on BBC Two, not BBC Four, BBC Two, on Friday, 9 o'clock. Watch it. Part 2 of the meet. I mean, you know, a few more hours to go. is Netflix's new 8-part, again, 8-part, it can be no coincidence, clearly 8-part is clearly the maximum,
number.
OA is also 8 parts, everyone, is the magic number. It's their new serial from the people who did The Five on Sky One a while ago. It's Harlan Coben's, is to give it its full title, Safe, and Harlan Coben is a brilliant author of mystery, thriller, crime novels. He's the master of plotting and of brilliant endings. This show stars Michael C. Hall of Dexter and 6 Feet Under fame as Tom. He's a pediatric surgeon. He's a single father of 2 teenage daughters. His wife died of cancer. And he's also having, he's kind of having a thing with his next door neighbour.
He's having it off with a neighbour.
He's having it off with a neighbour, Amanda Abington, who plays Sophie, who you find out, not immediately, I think very cleverly, is a police cop.
Yeah.
She seems like a normal kind of mother of kids and
but
having
she's
an effect.
Cops but can be mother.
She's exactly, and she is. She's a detective. And it all kicks off when one of his teenage daughters goes to a party and does not come back. Steph, mm-hmm. I'm coming to you.
Yes.
Because I'm a huge fan of everyone to do with the show. I mean, this is literally like a dream scenario for me. But is it
almost
a dream
like Sherlock?
Is it a dream scenario? Yeah, there's a Sherlock woman in it. You know, I'm obsessed I am with Sherlock. Apparently, it's all I ever go on about.
It is all
What about you?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I was a huge fan of The Five. Do you remember when I accosted that actor on the tube and told him that I loved him? Your mate. Who was in The Five? I can't remember what his name is. He was very nice. The Five was brilliant. This is also brilliant. Is Michael C. Hall? Was he British? Is he British in any way?
So I didn't know this.
His accent is incredible.
His accent is like. Except I was watching it and Boyd was saying, oh, I think he was having a chat with John Dan saying something about Dexter, and I was like, wait a minute, what? He's American. It is the best. British accent by American.
Well, the thing
I've
is,
ever heard.
I watched 6 Feet Under and I watched Dexter. And I was like, has he been British this whole time? And I just didn't realise.
No, 5 stars for the accent.
Yeah, I love the whole thing. It's incredibly intriguing. I love the way that he just weaves these tiny little details in, and you have to sort of pay attention to make sure you get it. The only thing about this that I just was slightly off for me, without giving too much away, is there's a bit of a comedy of errors element to it with some of the characters. And do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
And I don't know
the
whether...
neighbours.
Some of the neighbours. Yeah. Something happens. A situation happens. They have to deal with it. And it's just... I don't know whether that tone quite sits in it for me.
I know what you mean, but then I quite liked it because it made it realistic.
Yeah.
It was actually... If something had happened...
We know what you're referring to, but you're just wrong. Because I thought that tonal thing was brilliant, because it made it different. And it's got a kind of black comedic quality, like a Coen Brothers feel to me.
Yeah,
like a Fargo-esque.
I
love that.
I didn't
stuff.
Enjoy
it's a little
that
bit
fast. But you didn't have that in The Five, so I was kind of
not
expecting
it's definitely different,
that
tonally.
At all.
Yeah.
But it's in real stark contrast to the rest of it, because Michael C. Hall's character is this desperate father trying to find his daughter, and then you sort of cut to this calamitous situation. And for me, that doesn't quite work.
Okay. Yeah, I think I do disagree. Yeah, I loved that. I felt one of my favorite things about it was that you've got these like nouveau riche type people. So the whole thing is set. Yeah. The title Safe refers to they're all in a gated community. So it's in a very middle class, upper middle class area. Kind of it doesn't explain where it was all filmed in Manchester, and or you know a suburb.
Lovely
of Manchester.
Houses,
lushly visually, and you know all of this stuff. You know we talk about cinematic TV, but again another.
Very lush,
colourful. I like the vibrancy of the look of it. Like, not it avoided that kind of, you know, the cliche of dark, noirish things. For example, it doesn't look anything like The Bridge, for example, which is its own look. It was very bright, even though the subject matter is dark. But I like the fact there was a blackly comedic quality to it. And I think all the way through, not just in that, in I know what you're referring to without spoiling it, the neighbours, what the neighbours are getting up to. Because I think that even like, so for example, I loved Amanda Abington in it, playing this policewoman you don't realise a policewoman until she goes to the station and she starts investigating stuff.
She's
like,
my
favourite
thing about
her. Yeah, she's so good because it's such a human character who happens to be, and then she's lumbered with a new other cop who arrives that day at the station, who's this woman who's mysteriously spiky.
She is weird.
She's weird. And again, she's quite almost like funnily. Why is she being so difficult?
She was the policewoman in that other thing, wasn't she? Wasn't she in The Five?
Oh, she may have been in the
Five. She was the same person. Yeah.
And we've got Mark Warren as his gay best friend, as Tom's gay best friend, who's also very funny. And so I think it has got a wryly comedic, more comedic tone.
I did not get that he was gay.
Well, he is.
I didn't get that at all.
I didn't get that at first, and Boyd said it was mentioned.
Did you watch
one
or two episodes? Well,
No, I watched two. I watched two episodes.
Well, it definitely made it clear.
He explicitly says towards the end of.
But there's a little moment in episode one quite early on where he makes a reference to someone being him fancying some guy. I think it's quite subtly done. Okay. It's not over-egged, but he is.
I suppose that's what's good about it. It's subtlety.
Yeah. It's subtlety mixed with very you're like all the characters are introduced so well, so skillfully by Danny Brocklehurst, who wrote the script. So Harlan Coben comes up with the storyline. Brocklehurst writes the script. It's a brilliant combination because Coben is a genius of plotting and creating these storylines, these multiple things happening at the same time. And I guarantee, like, The Five was the greatest ending ever. We all, I think, agreed on that.
Yeah, I love
it. I don't know what happens with this, but
Five is genius, and you could not have guessed it in a million years.
And name drop, I interviewed Amanda Abington and Michael C. Hall together. And I said to them, what was your reaction? Was the ending as satisfying? And they were like, yeah, you will not. The ending's going to blow your mind. It's so satisfying. How he ties up all his threads and his solution to his mysteries are so brilliant. So I can't wait. It's literally perfect for me. I like this even more than the Dredge. Because all the elements are so great.
Can you see how some people might think that jars a bit?
I know what you mean. I think it's daring. I think it's daringly... the thing that people say a lot about in film reviews, I think I'm touching this before, tonally they say it's all over the place. Mm. That's a phrase that crops up in a lot of film reviews.
Do you know who I think it is?
So this is a bit tonally interesting. Those neighbours are quite comic in some ways.
Right.
But I think it works totally. I love that.
Shall I tell you what the other thing is about it? The reason why I think tonally it was wrong for those characters to be like that is because Leila Russo, who plays...
Leila Ruas. From Footballers' Wives.
Right, yeah. Mm. That's the thing. So I think for me, the last time I saw her on screen was Footballers' Wives. And then to see her in a role where I thought she was going to be serious and then see her being slightly comical, it felt like a different show.
No, I love it. Yeah. Nigel Lindsay's the guy from Four Lines is also he can do anything, but he's also quite... But they're supposed to be quite funny. I totally identify. They identify. You meet these people. All the time.
Oh my God,
they're believable.
And also the challenges they're facing, I think if I were to deal with them, I would deal with them. It would be a farce because it's like,
That's so true. That's so important because it's all about the believability of their reactions to what they're dealing with and what's happening. And I think every step of the way, even though they're quite funny, the situation they're dealing with, without wanting to give it away, everything they do and say to each other is kind of real. I think it's more real.
Yeah, of course. If it was less farcical, it wouldn't be real. Because you'd be like, how would you be so well-equipped?
Okay, put the finger on
Finger
hit the nail on the head.
I think that one of the best things about this is how expertly interwoven all the mini stories are and the characters are, and I can't wait to see how it ends.
There's a French teacher, finally, played by Audrey Fleurot.
Who is in Spiral.
So it's great cast. Brilliant. Emmett Scanlon from The Fall and Hollyoaks is brilliant as Amanda Abington's estranged... Husband
who's living in a caravan.
Living in a caravan in the driveway. Mm. All of these things are weird, but so it's like, how do you come up with this version of this mystery you've created? Five stars.
4.5 stars.
I mean, I've seen two. Have you seen two?
Yeah.
I've seen two.
I can't wait to see the whole bloody thing.
Yeah, me too.
On Netflix, all in one go, Friday, the 10th of May.
It's an odd acquisition for Netflix.
This was made for Netflix. So, Red Productions, who made The Five, and run by Nicola Shinler, who did way back when Queer as Folk was like their first ever thing, and they do most of Russell T. Davies' stuff. So Netflix wanted their own unique new thing from this team, and so they created it for them. And it's one of their few proper British, even though it's got Michael C. Hall.
Yeah, because you don't see a lot.
No, it's
like
a rare British bit. The whole thing is conceived as a British. Must-watch binge series in eight parts. So the whole thing is like designed. Yes, you're going to binge on it all in one go when it arrives on Netflix.
It's made me want to read more. Some Harlan Coben books.
I'll lend you some Coben. I'll bring some Coben in.
Okay,
he's a genius and a lovely man, by the way.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Bong.
Finally, bong. Big bong. Total bong situation.
Yeah.
Finally, and in huge contrast, Carnage.
Oh Lord.
This is a Sky One / Now TV. Original production in which, well, Steph, I believe it's your turn to describe the premise of our final piece of meat.
I'll do it.
What gives?
I'm just gonna say, guys, pogs out there, I watched that Mad Max film, the remake, and I hated it. So you can imagine my displeasure when thrust upon me was viewing this terrible show fronted by Freddie Flintoff, Lethal Bizzle, and Vic Hope, where people go into the desert with cars that they have modified and they race around tracks and they try and get each other off the track, and there's other cars that come out to try and push them off, and they've got all of these bits of metal coming out at various points and fire and explosions. I mean, it just keeps going like that, knocking each other out until they get to the end where they're just left with one person. And it's like...
Until someone dies.
Yeah. There's it's lovely, like, no teams people of people. Died in the
no, but it's very dangerous.
It is dangerous. I don't know how they got the insurance.
Well, who knows?
So it's in the desert and... Right.
Very dangerous.
So there's the teams of people. So they explain, oh, this is our ridiculous car that we've made, and we've taken a Ford Fiesta and we've put a bit of a tractor on it and made some sharp things on it. And then they go round and round and round this track.
As I said, it's like Mad Max, the game show, isn't it? So but the interesting thing is, they don't even pretend it's not inspired by Mad Max. They mention Mad Max in the first sentence of the show, the voiceover. There's one of the teams is called the Mad Max Appreciation Society, and all these vehicles are designed to look like they're out of Mad Max. And where they film it looks like it's where they film
Mad
Max.
Are the outfits they're wearing Mad Max inspired?
Yeah, they are.
Oh, right.
Oh, it's so rubbish.
My main question is, what permissions do they get from the Mad Max people?
I know.
George Miller and...
Yep. Yeah. Good point. Because also they're called the... So the heats are the grid, the desert race, the scrapyard, and it culminates in the dome. I know. You know what? Listen,
I
absolutely can get down with Freddie Flintoff, anything he does.
Oh, we could all get down with
him. I wish they'd stop throwing these ridiculous shows at him.
He's like good at this kind of game show, though.
He did that ITV one, didn't he?
He did the swimming one.
What was that called?
The Wipeouty one.
Yeah, Wipeout.
With the big bouncy thing.
Kay, you're the world's biggest Sandra Flintoff fan. I know you love a ramped up car. You love them. I mean, you're always going on about them. And you're a huge fan of Mad Max. I know that. What did you think? Do you agree with Steph's frankly damning indictment of carnage?
Crap. Do you know who I think will like this? I think my friend Steph, who's got two sons, Ben and Beau, who love cars and love this.
How old are they?
They're like 10. Yeah. They're probably not. Yeah. Apologies if not. But they're very young, ankle biters. And they will like this because this is completely up their street. So I think it's for young boys or... Yeah, young adults would like it. But
girls that are into cars.
Yeah, of course.
And Mad Max.
Yeah.
It's like Robot Wars, but kind of bigger.
So I never knew what Lethal Bizzle looked like. So I didn't actually notice him. So I'm watching him, this guy like strutting around in these goggles on his head. And I was like, what are you doing?
It's got a very silly name.
And then Vic Hope, who I also didn't know who was. And I was like, why have they put her in this like...
Oh yeah, why? Do you know why?
Huh?
Do you know who she is?
No.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me.
She's a presenter who's going out with someone from Raksu, apparently. But, her outfit, for some reason, it just irked me because I was like, oh, why have they put her in this skimpy, studded top? I got annoyed by that, and I'm not usually like.
And she's got her legs right, really. Yeah, her legs and I was like, this is. Put some trousers on, it's cold, love. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the desert, it's probably quite hot.
Well, she was wet. Well, Boyd, riddle me this. Why was she wearing a coat on her top half then? If it wasn't cold
for the look,
she was wearing a coat.
But I felt like it wasn't needed, and I was a bit like, okay, if we're gonna have some equality here, why don't you get Freddie
and
leather studded.
Freddie in pants is on.
Budgie smugglers.
Freddie is in pants on his Netflix account, by the way.
Well, fine.
Looking that's, buff.
But yeah, I mean, overall, it's entertaining, but not for me.
Much NFM. Like the cars, it's going to crash and burn this thing. It is going to.
You're
it's awful.
It. You're a hater.
Did you pre-think that? That was good.
No, it's just literally just off the top of my head.
Shoot the live ammo.
Right. Can I tell you why it's so awful? Right.
Well, I think you've told us a bit already. But if you want to carry on about it, we've got a few more hours to go.
I think the presenters are not good. But also, right, I don't what is the point of ramming these things off? What is the point to it? I don't get the point.
Because people get off on watching big, huge cars. It's like it's like in America there's loads of these things, aren't there? Truck road thingy and
monster trucks.
That's what
monster and trucks, that thing in the thing in that film, the Steven Soderbergh film, that big huge rammed up cars smashing into each other is a whole thing that people
love. Love car, you know, Top Gear. It's all those people who like
Yeah, that kind if of you learn to chant, Petrolheads is
that. But there's not enough technical elements in it to for Petrolheads to really like it. Do you know what I mean? So there's not, no, there isn't enough of them talking about how they design the car.
It's made you very angry.
Very angry.
Well, I just hate this kind of crap.
If you're into the idea of a 22-ton monster mutant truck smashing into another 22-ton monster mutant truck, then you will enjoy it. I thought I was mainly intrigued by how much it was influenced by Mad Max. Mad Max Fury Road is a masterpiece and is one of my, probably in my top 10 films of all time. This wasn't in my top 10 TV shows of all time. So, but it's NFM. It's not for me either.
Yeah,
NFU, not for us.
Yeah.
But I think Kay's right. It's for teenage
it's for Ben
boys.
And Bo.
Slash
it's not for the pops.
Any girls that are into cars. How many stars, Kay, are you giving Carnage?
I'm giving it 3 stars.
Steph, I dread to think, how many stars are you giving Carnage?
Remember Freddy?
Do you know what? For Freddy...
FF.
1.
Oh my God. I'm giving it 3. I'm going to give it 3. Carnage, give it a try it out yourself. It's
try
on
it, you might like it.
Sky One and Now TV on Sunday the 6th of May at 8 o'clock. That's our meet. I'm taking the editorial decision not to have question time because we've got to have our quick spoiler discussion of, as promised in the beginning.
As promised.
So, if you don't want to know what happens in the end of Avengers Infinity War, tune out and we'll see you next week. If you do want to have a little heated discussion about what happens at the end of Infinity War, then you can carry on listening now. So Kay hasn't seen the Avengers, so she's left the room just because she might see it.
We've told her to sod off. That's what we said.
But you two have. John's now got a microphone. Welcome, John.
Hello.
Pushing out the boundaries with a spoilerific Avengers. So I went to see you. You both went to the big critic screening last week.
Did you go to the quick?
Yeah, I saw you, but you were too far away in the queue and I didn't want to make a scene.
So here's my take. This is what I wanted to get. I'm abusing the fact that I've got access to a podcast to give my take on. I really enjoyed it.
Should we just set the premise of what Avengers Infinity War is?
Premise me up.
The only thing is, if they've got to the point where they're willing to hear spoilers, they probably know what I'm
saying. Okay, fine. Yeah. All right, go on then.
As everyone knows, this is the culmination of 19 films?
Yeah.
And all the major characters so far in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, most of them, almost all of them come together. The old Avengers, the new ones like Doctor Strange and Spider-Man's joined in, young Spider-Man, and they're all coming together, Black Panther, and they're fighting Thanos, who, I don't know why I'm explaining the plot now, even though, as you said, John's quite that. But I'm just reminding
it's
everyone.
It's a quick reminder.
It's a culmination situation. Yeah. It's the ultimate crossover. All the fucking characters, there's like dozens of them.
Yeah.
They all get their own bit, Guardians of the Galaxy, everyone. And they're all battling this Thanos CGI character played by James Brolin, who was great. Josh Brolin, sorry, James Brolin's his dad. So that's how old I am. And I thought Thanos was great, because I think they have a villain problem generally. I thought the villain in Black Panther was the best villain.
Yeah.
But this one was really good, especially for a CGI character. Very effective, great plan to destroy half of the universe. All of that was great. I like the funny interaction between all the different superhero connections. Particularly loved Iron Man and Doctor Strange's little bickering. I thought that was brilliant. I thought Cumberbatch was in great form. Enjoyed all of it. Then it gets to this famous ending, which is already infamous. Which is a big spoiler.
So the thing is, before Avengers Infinity War came out, everybody in the community that talks about these kinds of things, everybody
knew...
The
nerd community.
But we all knew that there was going to be a big death. We knew that we... But we did. It was like... And then... So I would talk with my friends.
Yeah, okay.
I'd talk with my friends and say, oh, who do you think is going to be the person who's killed off?
Okay.
The one person that's killed off. But as you...
Right, so there are deaths throughout. Yeah. I mean, there are people killed off.
Idris goes in the first 2 seconds.
Yeah, and then Loki.
Yeah.
And what's her name from The Guardians?
Gamora.
Gamora, which is really effective. That was a really good scene. That was great. So for me, all of this was great. And I thought, this is great. And it's all leading up. And of course, this is the first part. That's the other thing. You forget, because you're so involved in this 2.5-hour epic, that it's the prelude to this next Avengers 4 coming out next year, the second half of this culmination of all this stuff happening. Long story short, my big issue is the fact that they kill off all half of these characters, conveniently leaving the original Avengers. They're not the ones that die, but Black Panther, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, these characters all die at the end of this film, and die in inverted commas. I thought it was so silly Because we know, we all know we're adults. We know that there's going to be a sequel to Black Panther. There's definitely already they're talking about making the next Spider-Man film. Yep. There's clearly going to be another Doctor Strange film. Why pretend? It's absolute nonsense that they're not going to come back. So all you're left with is this big empty gesture of, oh, we're killing off all these characters. Bear in mind, they've already effectively killed off three, which I thought was clever and smart and unexpected and well done and had gravitas and weight. I thought it was glib and a desperate kind of attempt to make everything seem, oh, it's all so deep and meaningful, we're dealing with death. Because you know they're all going to come back. There's no way they're not coming back.
Right, okay. Right, you know that. I think there are, I do think there are people out there who are not like us and don't read everything and know everything, that will be like, oh my god, they're all dead. I do think people will think that. I don't think everybody thinks all of those characters are going to come again because they know that such and such is in production.
To defend Steph slightly,
yeah,
I did see someone who I'm not sure knew whether any of those characters were coming back, and he was a child. I can't imagine he was older than 6 years old, dressed in full Spider-Man garb, looking absolutely defeated.
I do think people think that they
children.
Died.
I'm serious. Children, sure.
But children do watch this
of course.
So that doesn't mean that film is not successful.
But I just don't see how any grown adult can come out of it without feeling, oh my God, what a powerful thing.
I was just going to flip it around for you. Okay. So the other way of looking at it is, okay, which is what I thought, it's like, are they all going to come back? Which of those characters is definitely not coming back, has died for real? That's what
the
I thought.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
That is a question, isn't it? Like, of all the people fading away.
I posit this theory. Sorry, John. Wouldn't it be much more effective? The deaths that were not as part of the climactic, we're killing everyone, half of them thing, half of the universe. And by the way, who decides which half of the universe is dying? And how does it decide? How does that
random.
Work? Yeah, totally random. It would have been really effective if the people who did die were dead and they've gone. And then it could have ended with Thanos clearly winning out and triumphing and about to destroy half of the universe. And that could have been it. This, for me, and I think very interesting. So I went to packed cinema, public showing. Everyone was like muttering and kind of not. I didn't think there was a big positive response to this film. I think the totally ending totally ruined it. Anyway, John, what were you
going
to say?
I'm going into fan theory territory now.
Okay.
The reason, my initial thought, I agreed with you. I thought, because I'm into all this stuff, I thought, firstly, actually, in the Infinity Gauntlet comic series, he does succeed at first and does kill half of the universe. So real nerds would have known that this is where the first film is ending. But also, so I saw Spider-Man and Black Panther go, and I thought, after the amount of money they just made off Black Panther, there's no way they're binning him off after one film. However, I've since realised that I think it will make the stakes higher in the second film, because it means that all those characters that you thought were going to die, your Robert Downey Jr.'s and your Chris Evans, they're probably going to have to die to win in the long run, and those will be more legitimate deaths. Is that worth the payoff, having to wait a year for those payoffs? Probably not.
Right. Okay. Let me just say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. You're not happy with the ending. I loved the ending. I thought it was brilliant. Right. At what point, though, up until the ending point, as a film, what did you think?
Oh, I really liked it. I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it. I mean, it's not my favourite of. I prefer standalone films with beginning, middles, and ends. So I really like Doctor Strange. I really like Black Panther. I prefer those over the Avengers films, to be honest. It's the same. Like, my taste is not to, even in like, so there's huge big war scenes in this, huge big battle scenes, which are incredible, epic things, which are brilliantly done. But I prefer the intimate moments, and generally, it's like the Game of Thrones thing argument we had. Right. But I prefer the episodes which aren't a huge battle sequence.
I know, you're totally wrong about that.
Right, well, I'm right about that. So for me, Black Panther is a way better film, I'm saying this now, than this film. As a film, storytelling. This is kind of like a wrangling. This is brilliantly wrangled. They've brilliantly wrangled the characters and the story. And it's like they knew they've set themselves, it's like a task fulfilled brilliantly, rather than a film. And I think in the future, honestly, this is rather pompous and slightly arrogant of me, but I'm saying in 10, 20 years' time, when you look back on these films, people are going to go, that was a thing that they wrangled, and it was part one of a two-part story, by the way, and how annoying is that? But as a film in its own right, it's not a coherent, satisfying thing, particularly with the ending. That's my issue. Whereas Black Panther, you know,
I just thought it was so... I thought, what could be clunky, when you bring lots of characters together, sometimes it is so clunky.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, let's just say Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. That was incredibly, that kind of Justice was incredibly clunky.
League yeah, Justice League was diabolical. Right. I mean, that's literally how bad
this,
it can get.
But this was, I felt that this was seamless the way they brought them together. And it didn't feel like feel like they created weird situations for them to meet. It all actually flowed really, really well. And I thought all three acts were really good.
Right, literally up until that ending, it did as well as it could have done. But I still, even then, I think just as a kind of concept and premise, it's less, that's my personal taste, it's less satisfying than those standalone great, the best Marvel superhero
But did
films.
You think, I mean, I also thought like the alliances between individual Avengers were believable. And also, I enjoyed the fact that they didn't, everyone didn't make up, they didn't all become like really good friends. They weren't, you know, like Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man didn't suddenly make up with Captain America. It wasn't all fine. They were just coming together for to defeat this person. They didn't really. I don't think
they even talk to each other. No. They don't get any contact, Iron Man and Captain America.
Oh, Captain America. I mean,
I just say, the huge highlight for me was, I think, Thor and Star-Lord.
Yeah.
All of those scenes. Totally. I mean, that was just amazing. Yeah.
They get separated pretty quick.
It was so, I thought it was so well done that. And I actually loved like the whole stuff with everything with Thor, who actually is my least favourite. I really enjoyed
Thor
him
used
in
to be
film.
A ball. Ragnarok reinvented
the last two films. Thor's he's skyrocketed up to my favourite.
Because I didn't like it. I didn't like Thor in general, so I haven't even watched Ragnarok.
Honestly, try Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok. I mean, I'm saying it here now. I think it might be a better film even that, because it's a coherent. It's a comedy, and it's a very coherently, brilliantly achieved comedic superhero film. It is what it is, and it's my own personal taste. But go on.
The big team ups, although I think they hint to this throughout, but the big team ups for me feel like, and I'm actually saying this to someone who really likes them, they feel like a big old soap opera. They're like the biggest budget soap opera ever with the big cliffhangers and characters. And
yes.
I quite like that personally, but I can understand where you're coming from.
I enjoy it for what it is. I enjoy it as it's happening. And I think that it is like a serial, it's a big serial TV drama. This is what they were trying to do. And they have done it in huge, big cinematic form. And that's very entertaining and very enjoyable as it's going on. It's more like when you step back of it. When I step back from it, I think, and I look at them as films in their own right, I don't feel this film, Avengers Infinity War, is anywhere near going to be considered a great piece of film, a great film in its own right. As a great example, I don't. See, that's what I say. Yeah.
What about loads of people have been comparing this, particularly because of the ending, to The Empire Strikes Back tonally.
See, that's the thing. The genius of The Empire, it is like The Empire Strikes Back is, that's a brilliant comparison, is the absolute classic of the middle entry where there's another big, where it ends on the cliffhanger. But it satisfies in its own right, and it doesn't feel like it's grasping for meaning and impact.
I don't know where you're getting that from at all.
Steph, it should have ended. We're not moving enough to have him successfully. It's about to destroy half the universe. That's not enough. They've got to glibly kill off half these characters you know are going to come back. That's not... powerful.
I was left absolutely
empty and slightly irritated that my intelligence was being insulted. And anyone who knows these films knows they're going to come back. It's like, so it's clearly going to be a time thing as well, time travel thing, isn't it? It's the only way out of it. So they'll travel back in time and they'll be alive.
But isn't there any enjoyment in understanding that how they're going to get them back? Knowing that in the next one they
some,
are going
but
to...
I feel that's I give it again,
so
that feels like
say,
an exercise rather than a genuine piece of storytelling.
So you would say it was completely unnecessary to kill them off. You would have just had
absolutely.
Them be where they are, and you would have had Thanos looking like...
Or do that, even better, do what you're... If you want to do that, fine, but do that in the next film. Don't leave that as your cliffhanger. Don't leave that as your ending, leaving everyone feeling empty and slightly unsatisfied.
I completely... Do you know what? Everyone I've spoken to have seen it. Absolutely loved it. I think...
Oh, no, there's a lot of people who agree with me.
I think you... I don't know. I don't really understand why you think that's unsatisfying. Because if you're going to see that anyway, why not see it at the end of this film? Why does it matter?
Because this feels like they're playing a trick on you. They've played a trick on you and they're trying to... And they're using this device... You know, as a way of building up the next film. Whereas there was a way, I think there was a way of ending it satisfyingly, showing the victory of Thanos without milking it and trying to fool us into thinking that any of these characters are dying when they're not.
But taking into account that I do believe that there are people out there who believe that those characters are dead now.
Only kids, surely. Only children.
That's
fine.
Okay.
I don't think that's good enough.
Just traumatised children. Yeah, that's fine. That's great.
Go on.
Just quickly.
Yes.
So do you not think, because you have a much superior knowledge of kind of film than me, so
not of these films, I'm
probably
sure.
Probably you can find some examples. But do you not think there's something to be said for like the metaphor, like, you know, metaphorically the balls of being able to have a film that ends with the villain winning?
Yeah.
I love that. That's not my issue. Ending with the villain winning is brilliant.
I completely agree.
It should have ended with the villain winning, and you didn't. And it made it quite clear that the half the universe is being destroyed. Without that, would have been a brilliant ending. That's my preferred ending. The villain wins, but you don't need to kill off half of these main characters that you know are going to come back, and you don't need to see that. That was the actual ending.
But
seeing these characters dissolve, meaningless. It's a meaning.
That was the whole
final
point of the
comment
time stone.
It made it meaningless because it's totally light, and there is all the heft of the film. All the deaths in the middle of the film were so powerful.
Right.
These deaths at the end of this film were for me absolutely meaningless and lightweight.
Okay.
And glib.
But there had to be an immediate consequence to Doctor Strange giving up the time stone. There had to be, like, didn't there? There had to be a consequence to that for him giving
could have killed
that
off
over.
One of them. But that the whole ending of you're going around, half of them disappearing into dust or whatever it was, I just felt it was ludicrous. It just didn't work. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to me droning on about this film. Apologies the fact that I didn't like the ending, John and Steph. We'll all be back next week. Thank you very much. It's goodbye for me.
So goodbye from me and Kay on Kay's behalf.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.